Big ol' Marcus.
Oh, dude.
Big ol' Marcus.
Right here. Welcome back to the Native Ways Podcast. I'm your host, Richard Ellis.
I'm your co-host, Christian Miller.
And today we're doing something pretty unique. This is definitely different for us. I'm going to let Christian kind of tell you about what's going on here.
Yeah, so we're at the Temple Arrowhead Show, Artifact Show right now. We're actually in our own booth right now doing this podcast pretty much live. And we got a whole setup over here. Got some giveaways going on. And, yeah, we're just trying to get back to the community and trying to spotlight what we got going on.
Yeah, we got a good bit of people flowing through here already. We got some cool stuff lined up throughout the day with a lot of different collectors. Just a lot of stuff. You know, it's getting a lot of interest already, and it's only 8:20 in the morning. Giveaways rocking and rolling. It's probably tripled or quadrupled what we had from yesterday. And, yeah, so we're going to get this thing rolling. It's just going to be kind of like a montage. There might be a certain segment or two that we make into its own episode. Might hit some to the points while we're here.
Yep.
But we're going to do just an overall montage of just all kinds of stuff. This is one of the largest shows in the U.S., some insane pieces here. A lot of content coming just from this show.
Yep. Definitely blessed and excited to be here. I mean, it's going to be a good day. And if you're listening now, hopefully that we got to meet you and got to talk with you on here. But
absolutely. And then, you know, before we just really get rolling, like Christian said, we're doing a giveaway. So we want to shout out the people that always support us. Dancing Dogs Ranch, Texas Cash, newly on the scene, Gabe DeLuna with Texas Amateur Archaeologist. We're going to have him on to talk about his part of the giveaway. We got Cole Taylor with TaylorMade Rakes, TaylorMade Tables. So just a lot of people, you know, coming together to kind of support what we have as an idea and what we have going forward.
Yes, sir.
Hope y'all enjoy this one. All right, guys. So we told y'all we're here at Temple doing some live recordings. And right now we've got a very well-known guest. Let him introduce himself.
My name is Benny Richards. I'm a former Texas game warden and very into Indian artifact hunting.
Yes, sir. So you want to tell us a little about what got you into it?
Yeah, the story goes all the way back probably 55, 60 years when I was a little bitty boy. I was walking around a creek bed and found my first arrowhead, and I was fascinated by it. And then shortly after that, my father and I, we were on the deer lease, and walking to and from deer stands, I found a couple more. And at that point, I became more interested in looking for those little pointed rocks than I did looking for the antlers. And it stuck with me. It's like I said, it kind of got in my blood. And over the course of about 55, 60 years, I've just been keeping my eye on the ground and picking up points as I go.
Heck yeah. Sounds like a lot of our starts, I would say. But what's really cool, you know, you said you're a retired Texas game warden, right?
Yep, I retired in 2020.
Heck yeah. And you were on Lone Star Law?
I was. I probably appeared on that for the 6 years that they were filming, and now they're doing reruns, and I don't watch them anymore, but everybody kind of keeps me up to date and says, hey, I seen you on TV last night. So that lets me know it's still being seen.
Yes, sir. So Cole asked a pretty good question earlier. You want to hit that one again?
Yeah, it just occurred to me, you know, you being a law enforcement officer and being in that world, you know, you don't always run on, you know, fishing deer calls and poaching calls. And I was just curious on how often you would encounter that being a game warden.
As a game warden, you mean running on somebody out in the field collecting or looking for arrows?
It just happened across them.
It was a pretty common occurrence depending on where I was at. But as I was telling you earlier, when I got my start on Cooper Lake over in Delta County, and that lake, because they pump so much water out of it, the level would go up and down, sometimes drastically.
Gotcha.
And there were a lot of local people that liked to look for points, and they would go out there, and I would run on to them. And, of course, when I was going to them, I knew what they were doing because I personally would collect them, so I knew what was going on. And, you know, I would show up, and I'd get different responses. A lot of times they'd think they were, oh, my gosh, I'm in big trouble. Game warden's here, and I'm not supposed to be doing this. But the way I always looked at it was that it was a healthy, hobby to do. It's inexpensive. It kind of brought people together, friends and family. And
you'd rather them be doing that than spotlighting a deer off the road.
Absolutely. So, I rather than beat somebody over the head with a law book, my approach to it was I encouraged it.
Yeah.
When I'd see somebody come, you know, back to their truck, and I might have thought they were hunting, and then I find out they're looking for areas. Well, then I wanted to see what they found because I was genuinely curious about how well they did and what they
found. Kind of cool.
Yeah.
You know, our game warden there in Nevada County, I know you know him, Jimmy Woolley.
Yeah, I work with Jimmy a lot. He's a good guy.
He kind of has the same standpoint on that. He's like, I'd rather you be out there hunting in pointy rocks and shooting a deer out of a high fence or spotlighting a county road. Right. Or if you're out there looking for rocks, you're a lot less criminal to me than a poacher.
Right.
Or, you know, somebody doing dope or whatever it is that they would be out there doing.
And, of course, you know, there are laws that govern some of this stuff, and I had my own personal standards. You don't want to do this in a state park or on, you know, some government-owned land.
A little bit of discretion goes a long ways.
Yeah, but if you're on private property, for sure, or property you got permission, or in a, you know, a public-owned stream bed that turns over constantly, generally you're okay. You know, you're not breaking any laws. You're not going to get in trouble. Just as long as you, you know, you stay within the area where you got permission or where it's allowed.
Well, it was cool to me. You know, for all those years, I watched you on Lone Star Law, and I guess it was after you retired, I saw that you were an artifact guy, and that was, I was like, dang, that's cool, you know, to know that a Texas game warden is out there living the life and enjoying hunting arrowheads, you know. I guess it kind of makes you feel a little more in level with us guys. I feel like it's a sickness for us.
I'll tell you about that. I, as a game warden, I a lot of new game wardens that came on that were my partners that never hunted arrowheads in their life. If you go talk to every one of them now, they've got collections. Because I kind of turned them on to it, and then they started looking at the ground and paying attention, and over the years they've found collections now. So
that's cool. Well, so in all those years, What would you say would be the coolest thing you saw somebody find that you ran on?
Someone else or myself?
Somebody else that you got a call on or you had a contact with.
You know, I don't know. I'd have to put some thought into it. I can't think of anything spectacular that comes to mind.
A lot of common stuff.
Yeah, a lot of common stuff. But every now and then, up there on the North Suffolk River, in Delta County and Fannin County along there.
Paleo country.
Yeah, I've seen some really nice stuff come out of there. And to this day, not as often now, but there's still some good stuff that comes out of there.
I know Marcus Whitaker, he collects a lot of stuff off the North and South Sulphur, and he's got a lot of high-quality paleo that's come off of that up there. And I know there is a lot of high-quality paleo. There's a guy a couple booths over. He fossil hunts at North Sulphur River up there and vines. I don't know what it is about that area, but it's incredible up there.
Yeah.
Cooper Lake and all that.
That place has changed so much since I was a little kid, because that's where I got my start, the North Sulphur River Channel and the South Sulphur River. That's what I call home. But it has changed so much. That North Sulphur River has gotten so much wider. And, of course, you know now they're building that new reservoir, which is going to inundate or flood some of it. But
it's good for us duck hunters.
Yeah, but it's just I don't know. There's so much deposits of, you know, artifacts up there. It's crazy.
And you know, you think you say that, you know, in that amount of years, the way that topography of that river and how it's run, how that changed. Imagine how that's changed in 10,000 years since those points were lost. Those camps have been washed out. What the difference of it is now?
There was I've lost contact with him. There was a man named Kenneth Bush who used to hunt that North Sulphur back when I was a little kid.
Yeah.
And he tells me, or he's told other people that have told me his story, he said when he first started hunting that North Sulphur, it was like 30 foot wide and 10 foot deep.
Wow.
Well, you know what it looks like now.
Yeah,
it's almost. Of the erosion. and that's crazy. I think that thing was channeled in the 30s.
Yeah, they straightened it out, something like that.
Yeah, well, you know, to stop the flooding.
Right.
Because if you look at topographical maps, you can see the old channel, and it was just like a snake.
I guess what are now Oxbow Lakes and all that.
And they went in there in the 30s to stop the flooding and straightened it out. And I guess no one ever had any, never imagined.
That it would get so big?
The erosion, and it would get that big over the years, but it has.
You know, imagine what they found when they straightened that thing out.
There's no telling.
Cool. Think about the what could be's and the has been's.
Oh, yeah. So what has your personal collecting adventure looked like, you know, through the years? Like you said, you started as a kid. And
well, I'll tell you, like I said, I started as a kid, and I amassed a huge collection, and I made a huge mistake. I sold my collection.
Mm.
And the story on that was I'd collected, and I had a huge collection. I had some really nice stuff. But my son, when he graduated high school, he ended up at a private university with very, very expensive tuition.
Mm. And gotta do what you gotta do, though.
Me being his dad, you know, at that point I started looking at that collection kind of like a bank account, and I ended up selling it for way less than what it's probably actually worth. But it helped me put my son through college. So that was the bright side of it, but I sure do miss that collection. And in the years since, about, I don't know, that was in 2013, 14, something like that, but I put together a few frames of personal finds. But I can tell you that they're a lot harder to find up in my neck of the woods now just because of the competition.
Oh, yeah.
The farming practices have changed. There's not a lot of cotton fields now.
Right.
And they went to the no-till drill, so you don't have as much plowed land to look in the fields.
Well, you're in the same boat I am. You know, that's what Northeast Texas, Caddo country.
Yeah.
You know, where I live in Corsicana, so I have the same typology that you do. You probably have a little more of that paleo than we do. We still get some of it, but for me, you know, I grew up hunting East Texas, and you know, a 2-inch Gary, a good one, I freaked out over.
Same here.
Now, once for the last 7 or 8 years that I've been hunting the hill country and doing the digging in the hill country, I almost turn my nose up at East Texas stuff.
Yeah, a lot
and
different.
We, you know, up there in Northeast Texas, as you know, the digging is not really an option because of the soil type. It's like
sand.
It's like digging through putty or silly putty. It's you just don't dig down there. So I'm a little envious and jealous of some of these collections that they dig down in the Central Texas. Wish I was closer to it.
And you know, like the. As far as the saturation of artifacts and camps for Northeast Texas, East Texas, there's the same amount of camps in East Texas per square mile as there is in the hill country, maybe even more in the hill country. What strikes me as crazy is the difference, the imaginary cutoff, I guess you can say, for me, I would say, would be the Trinity River and the Brazos River. So east of the Trinity, it's all Caddo. West of the Trinity, you start getting into that kind of transitional stuff. Once you get to the Brazos and west of the Brazos, it turns into Central Texas hill country stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Changing material and changing cultures.
Oh, yeah. You know,
like that.
We do find some hill country, Central Texas type material back east, but nothing like you do west of the Brazos River. West of 35, kind of like, you know, the Sandhill Crane hunting country. Like, it's almost the same type deal where we don't find that high quality stuff back east. And that's, for me, that's what drove me to the Central Texas area and the hill country is hunting them points.
Yeah, the quality of material. And
we just don't find those 3-inch, 4-inch, 5-inch pieces back east.
I know. Too bad.
It's
too bad, yeah.
So have you always had the dream to become a game warden, or did that just come about, like, How did that come about? Because
you know,
when I was young, that was my dream. I always wanted to be a game warden since fifth grade.
I got caught up in the perfect storm that was good for me. I grew up hunting and fishing.
Yeah.
That was kind of like my eyes were open. I was out hunting and fishing. If they were closed, I was dreaming about hunting and fishing. So, but then when I got out of college, I got into law enforcement, and I was a patrol officer for Richardson Police Department.
Mm-hmm.
And so that gave me some law enforcement experience. And then the Game Warden Academy thing came along, and I had the college degree, which was required, and I had the background because of hunting and fishing. And it just was a natural, you know, something that led me into being a Game Warden. And,
right.
and once they put the blue badge on me and I hit the field, I knew that I'd found my calling in life, and it worked out real well for me. I had a great career. And since retiring, people ask me if I miss it, and absolutely.
Yeah.
Especially on cold November nights. I sure wish there was a patrol truck sitting out there I could jump in and go run some back roads. But
yes, sir.
I still keep involved with it. I've still got good friends that are game wardens.
Right.
And I carry a special game warden commission, which, for lack of a better term, reserve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Yeah.
So how did that affect when you were, you know, full-time game warden? Did that affect your being in the outdoors, you're hunting yourself or fishing yourself? I know a lot of people are like, I would never want to be a game warden.
I hear a lot of people that say they want to become a game warden because they like to hunt and fish. And yeah. I said, well, you might want to decide on something else, because for me personally, when I became a game warden, the time I had to spend for personal hunting and fishing was cut drastically.
Exactly. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
I was out working, and I took it serious. And so, my personal hunting and fishing time was cut in half. Yeah. And not until I retired did I get back to what I used to do.
Right.
But I still enjoyed it because I was out there with other people who were hunting and fishing and enjoying the outdoors. So it was great. But I tell everybody, before you decide you want to be a game warden, you better understand that you're fixed to give up your weekends for the rest of your adult life.
Yeah, it's almost like kind of rewarding being able to teach people that don't know. Like, some people are completely uneducated, go out there and do a bunch of stuff, and they don't mean any harm, they don't mean any wrong, and being able to teach those people the correct
way to do things,
can almost be more rewarding, because you're contributing to
that
community.
That was kind of our the way we operated was, you wanted to educate people before you had to enforce the law.
Yes, sir.
Of course, some of them you can't educate them, and even if you do, they're still going to break it.
Yeah.
And we did. We tried to help people along and educate them and teach them the right way and give them the information they needed to follow the law. And the ones that, didn't want to do it right, well, we would handle that in another direction.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
I had something. Oh. So my buddy, like you were saying, I've got a buddy, and he's the game warden in San Saba, and he's, just like you, he's into arrowheads, he's into hunting, a lot of the stuff we do, duck hunting, deer hunting, calling predators and stuff, but like you said, his weekends and hunting seasons are so limited just because the work he does for what he loves, really. So it's cool to hear that from you. And the perspective, I noticed watching Lone Star Law, especially your perspective, and something I always appreciated about your perspective on it, was you did approach things from an educational standpoint. It seems like, and this may be me just speaking from what I watched, but majority of y'all's calls seem to be people that just aren't educated as to the way things work with hunting regulations, fishing regulations a lot of the times. Now, like you said, there are those specific cases where there's people that are just going to do what they want when they want.
Right.
But a lot of the stuff is just people didn't know better.
Yeah.
So,
and I'll say this.
Before I would, I didn't mean to interrupt
you're good.
But before I would whip out that ticket book, I would ask myself, did this person know better, or should they have known better?
Right.
If I knew for a fact they did know better, that was one thing. But you say, well, should they have? Or, at that point you ask yourself, well, was this an honest mistake? And so we had a room to use our discretion. And there was a lot of people that, if I decided, had they been given more information, they might not have made this mistake. At that point, you can give them a break, just a warning or whatever. So it wasn't always about, like I said, going out there and beating somebody over the head of a law book or an I got you moment.
Yeah.
It was about educating people and enforcing the law, sometimes just through education.
I feel like you had the perfect balance.
Yeah.
Discretion. But then I remember there was an episode where, I can't remember who it was, you said to him, and I always remember this in your voice, you said, ignorance of the law is not an excuse.
Yep, that's true.
But you, like I said, you had the perfect balance of friendliness, but yet business at the same time.
Yeah,
and I had a lot of personal experience to fall back on. And what I mean by that is, I grew up duck hunting. And I know from personal experience that you're, okay, we'll say you're teal hunting and you've got, you're one bird from a limit, and you're sitting there and all of a sudden a group of 15 comes flying over the decoys, and you shoot in there trying to get one bird, and three of them hit the water.
Chilliwack, three of them in one shot.
Okay, well, now you're over your limit, but you weren't trying to. Mm. And I've had personal experiences like that. So when I run onto that, as a game warden, I was able to look back on my experience and apply it to what I was standing looking at. And in a lot of instances, it's like, hey, y'all be careful next time. Don't let this happen again.
That's really cool to hear that right there, too, because we actually had an experience with a game warden locally a couple years ago. Very similar situation. We were early teal hunting, and we had a volley of probably 15 birds come in. Mm-hmm. And that was the only volley of birds we had the whole day. But we shot, and I think we killed probably 10 of that 15 between, what was it, four of us?
Yeah.
Well, it was open until, so we knew there was going to be game wardens. You know, we do everything by the book. We're walking out, we get stopped by the warden, and he's like, well, where are y'all's birds? We show him. And he said, well, who shot what bird? Well, we don't know. We're like, you know, this is what happened. It was a group of about 15 birds. They come in, we all shooting amongst them, and this is what fell.
Like, we knew how many birds we had shot each, but we didn't know specifically which bird.
Yeah. Right.
And, you know, he wanted us to know exactly who shot what bird and have them on separate stringers, basically. We're like, man, we don't know that, and we know we're not over anybody's limit.
I got you. I run on that all the time. Here again, if that particular warden has had a long background of duck hunting, he can apply that.
Yeah.
You know, he knows that that's a scenario that happens hundreds of times a day across the country in the waterfowling world. So, you just take each case on an individual basis, and you can tell.
Yeah.
It goes back to what I said a while ago. Do these people know better, or is it just an honest mistake?
It's not like we were sitting out there with no plugs and lead shot or something.
Right. Because there's some of those that do that.
Yeah,
100%.
And they're the ones that actually need the attention of the game.
Yeah, we sat there and we talked with him, and, you know, he had already checked our guns and everything, so he knew we were legal, checked our stamps and all that, and... Yeah, he got down to that, and I was like, man, you got to be kidding me. Like, you really – I was like, okay, well, next time, you know, we'll make sure we separate them and have our birds to where, okay, you got two and you got – but there ain't no way to tell on that.
The best part, though, is when you get a relationship with a warden. Like, we know one back home that he knows us just from doing the right thing. You know, right whenever – he didn't even have to ask for anything. He didn't ask to see our guns or anything. We already had everything just ready because we knew the law. You know, we knew what he was going to ask us. And then the next time he stopped, he's just like – oh, it's just y'all. I know y'all are good. Like, who shot that first shot? And we're like, I don't know, someone over there. And he just went straight over there. He, like, didn't even have to check our boat or anything.
And there's a word in the English language is flagrant. And if you will apply that to a lot of your enforcement, you know, okay, here's a simple mistake. Here's a simple mistake. Here's a flagrant mistake.
Yeah.
And when I say flagrant mistake, 2 o'clock in the morning, some old boys rolling down the road with a gun hanging out the window trying to shoot girls. That's a flagrant violation. There's no question.
Yeah. Deer cans in the back.
You know,
and
we don't have to, did you know better? You knew better. So those are the issues, those flagrant violations are what really keep game wardens up at night.
Right.
And what should be the biggest part of your law enforcement activities, looking for those flagrant violations.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
So, speaking of flagrant, what were some of the most flagrant things you ran into, or just in general, what's the most, well, what instance sticks with you the most out of your career?
Here again, I couldn't pick one out right off the top of my head, but I can tell you the number of calls for trespassing.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big issue, trespassing, as far as hunting. As far as fishing eyes, you know, netting would be something that would really get our attention. Somebody netting hundreds of fish, hundreds of pounds of fish.
Gill nets.
Yeah, but the hunting, it was always the trespassing was a really frequent call.
Yeah.
So, and I tell everybody that, you know, the grade of penalty, that went from being just something very minor to a pretty serious offense. If you get on someone's land and you shoot a deer without their permission, you just committed a state jail felony.
Yeah. Especially with the firearm.
That's not just a simple citation anymore.
Yeah.
So I would encourage everybody before you cross that fence, you better have permission to be on the other side. Because
mm-hmm.
it could get serious real fast.
And now even trespass by a projectile is a big deal.
Yeah. Shooting across the fence line,
We do a lot of predator hunting, and we talk with our local game warden, especially because Bell County, at least according to the game warden and what I've read, there's no minimum acreage to hunt outside of city limits. So the biggest deal there is just making sure, you know, you can be hunting on an acre of land, but making sure your projectile will not cross that acre. So whether that be shotgun or however. But,
everybody should know that because it's covered in your hunter's ed course.
Yeah. So I guess... before we round this out, you know, what do you have a specific find? And I think it's awesome, like we said earlier, that a Texas game warden encourages what we do. I mean, there's hundreds of people here at this show. It's one of the largest shows in the nation, and you're here. You've got books out. You're selling books, right? And talking to people, which is, I mean, in my opinion, that's amazing. One of the highest representatives in the state of Texas for the outdoor community. What is one find that you've had over your life that sticks out?
You talk about as far as artifacts?
Yes, sir.
For some reason, if you know anything about it, there's different types and different ages for these things. And for some reason, the Scott's Bluff Point has always been, I've been fascinated with that particular type. And I've been lucky to find a few. But one day, I was out with my son, and it was after a big rain. It was in February, it was very cold. It was actually some frost on the ground. And I found a Scott's Bluff Point about 6 inches. Just pristine, perfect, laying there like an Easter egg.
It's nice and frosted.
It took me about 2 days to get my tongue out of my throat. I just swallowed my tongue, and that was a really memorable morning of finding that particular point.
That's awesome.
So, I think that would be anybody's lifetime, find a 6-inch Scotty.
It was on the surface. Incredible find.
Gosh. Yep.
Well, Mr. Richards, we dang sure appreciate you talking with us. We appreciate all you've done for the state of Texas. Appreciate what you do for the artifact community now, and we'd love to talk to you later on down the road.
Well, it's my pleasure.
Thank you, sir.
Maybe
thank
get you to hunt with us.
You
yes,
bet.
Sir.
Thank
yes,
you.
All right, so we just finished up with Mr. Benny Richards, and now we got our first community cash member over here, and you want to introduce yourself?
My name's Dustin Latham. I've been into artifacts for about 5 years now. I'm from Louisiana, but ever since I got to my first paydig out in Texas, I've been about the Texas artifacts.
Oh, yeah. Hard
I just
to beat
got ridiculous with it. It's hard to beat the quality that you find out here.
Especially what you've been finding.
Oh, man.
Golly.
Yeah, I've been lucky. Lucky's not even a good word for it, just blessed as far as what I've been able to find. And finding the cache, a sweet corner tang, a needle-tipped Ocala. I mean,
you found the Scott's Bluff drill too, right?
Yeah, found the Scott's Bluff drill, and I found another Scott's Bluff that same day.
Wow.
There you
so
go.
Yeah, I was on fire for a little bit.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's once I got into hunting artifacts in Louisiana, dude, it was just got bit hard. And then I just, once I started seeing that there was an ability to come out here and actually dig and you have the chance to find stuff like that, oh, it was over with. Over
yes,
with.
Sir. So what got you into digging?
So honestly, I started digging at my house. I found my first arrowhead in the driveway, and my grandpa was like, hey, they're out there in the garden. I was like, no way. So I got there. I found a couple preforms, a couple brooks. I'm like, all right, I'm putting a hole here. So I started digging out in Louisiana, and then that's really – it just took off from there. And at one point, I had like a 50-foot-wide, 3-foot-deep hole in my front yard. Like, it just looked crazy.
Sounds like jeans.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it just about got there. But after that, I started kind of looking around and getting access to different places in Louisiana. So now I have probably about 5 or 6 different properties I can go to at any given time to try to find, you know, more stuff. But, yeah, I mean, it's finding one in the driveway, and it was shoveling dirt after that.
Yes, sir.
Like, it was pretty fun.
Heck, yeah. I guess what's your best Louisiana find? I mean, I'm not – you probably say it, and I probably won't know what it is unless you say, like, a Gary.
No, it's not going to be a Gary. I'd have to say I got San Patrice, yeah. My finest one from Louisiana is a San Patrice. I have a really nice point. It's called a Del High.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's made out of brown gravel, got nice, you know, collateral flaking on it. And it's a sweet piece, too.
Heck, yeah. What about, so you got started digging in Texas. What was your first pay dig down here?
I actually went to Gilligan's for the first time when they were running out of their house.
Really?
And, I went out there, and I was digging all day. Didn't really find nothing. And then towards the end of the day, I found a broke St. Mary's Hall and then a little Perdiz and then a couple other broke pieces. And I was like, oh, no. I was like, this is what it's going to be like. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
And then after that, I saw that I was looking for somewhere else. I was like, okay, there's got to be other places. And I saw GT's. And, you know, I went there. First trip was kind of okay. Second trip, I took a coworker out. And it was the very end of the day. I had probably a 3-foot-wide pile of dirt. I'm sitting here sifting. I'm like, man, I ain't going to find nothing. And the next thing I know, the tip of that Ocala comes and sticks up right out of the dirt. And I was like, whoa. And that was my first actual Texas killer. And then, oh, boy, it was. Then, you know, it's really on once you find something like that. Yeah. It's like, oh, dang.
So that was back when he was running all the hand tables out there and stuff. Mm-hmm. Found on the hand table?
Yeah, it was about three years ago.
So okay.
Yeah.
Awesome. And then from there, like you said, this year, well, I guess the past, we'll say calendar year, you've just absolutely crushed it, man, I would say, right?
Yeah, I feel like it for sure. I mean, it's, you know, finding that cash, and then I'm going to, you know, rock shelters out here in Texas. And
yep, with Mike.
Yeah. J-Mike's a good dude. Shout out.
He's got some stuff coming up that
yeah,
I don't know if he's talked to you about it yet.
Yeah.
But be ready.
Yeah. he's keeping me in the loop.
Yeah. Well, I'll hit you up outside of the podcast about it once I know a little more, but
yeah.
that's gonna be
yeah,
the juice right there, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But so when you come back down here and that Scott's Bluff drill, so what, I guess let's kind of talk chronologically, like this year, how your finds went. I know you found the cash, the Scott's Bluff drill, the corner tang. I mean, just an insane year for personal finds. But kind of tell us chronologically and talk about those points.
Well, I would let's see. I guess we can start with the corner tang, because I found that one well before I found the cash. And I was actually, I went down to GT for a week for a vacation. Paid for by my boss.
Really?
Yeah, he paid for the whole thing. So we stayed down there.
Sounds like a vacation getaway for sure.
Yeah. So we're sitting there, and I was on the shaker table for a couple of days. And this was back in, like, last August.
Yes, sir.
Prior to that, you know, everything's been, like, shaker tables. Nothing really, you know, crazy.
Yes, sir.
You know, I've been finding points, but nothing like the quarantine level. But, shoot, it was nice. That day, we were on the shaker table, and my best friend Aaron was right next to me. And it was right towards the end of the day. I don't know what it is. I got that end-of-day magic or something. We're sitting there, and I'm like, buddy, I think that's about it. Wipe my forehead, look down. I was like, oh, man, grabbed it. And you couldn't even see the actual corner tank part yet. You just saw that. I was like, man, this is a sweet blade. And I was like, whoa, here we go. Oh, boy, I made so much noise. It was Gene and Ray were at the very front of the site, and they just came booking it back. You just see trucks pulling up. What's going on?
That's what's awesome with Gene. He's so excited. Like,
oh, yeah.
And we talked about that with him the other day. Like, he's just as excited for you to find one as when he – like, I've been on digs where Gene was digging, and he's just as excited when a customer finds one as when he finds one.
Oh, yeah.
And to find a piece like that, that corner tang is insane. And I've got a few dream points, and one of my dream points is one of them kind of dog leg corner tangs like that, man. Mm.
Yeah, so after the corner tang, I believe – I kind of had a couple of weeks off, and then funny story, the only reason I found the cash is because I actually traded Gene a dirt bike for it.
Oh, really?
For some checker table time. So we go out there, and this is a one-day trip from Louisiana all the way out to Elgin and back in one day. I gotta go. So we went out there, and I wasn't really feeling super great at the time, and I was like, man, I don't know, maybe I should just go back home. And then my buddy Aaron was like, hey, we came all the way out here, so let's just stick it out. And, you know, it's like, all right, well, we wait, and there were some other guys ahead of us. And we're like, we'll see what they find, you know. And they drove up, and it's like, okay, well, all right, we'll stay, that's fine. And started on the shaker table. I had like a nice Marcos came out beforehand, and a couple other kind of random points. And then I was sitting here, just looking at a flake, kind of wiping it off, just looking for like worked edge on it or something.
Mm-hmm.
I look down, and you just see the preforms just everywhere. And then we grab those, next bucket, 10 of them, boom, 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 boom. And we couldn't pick them up fast enough. I mean, I'm telling you, it was such an amazing experience. Like, even talk about it, I still get goosebumps, because it just has that kind of effect. Like, it's just, that's. It's going to be hard to top a find like that for the rest of my life.
So how many total pieces were in that cache?
57. It ended up being 57 pieces. With two tabs of chert that are the same material this is all made from. So it was like, it's so cool.
Yeah, like, they were sitting there coring it out and getting ready to make projectiles out of it.
It's real neat. Later this month, I have a meeting with Mike Waters from A&M,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to try to hopefully get a better idea of the culture associated with it. And we're not entirely sure because it doesn't show, like, it has overshot flaking, but that's not necessarily, you know, extremely distinctive just to Clovis, but it also has other features that aren't Clovis.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like probably transitional paleo is
yes,
what
sir.
I'm thinking. But as far as, like, exact culture,
yeah.
we don't know yet, but we're hoping to get more information at the end of this month.
I know when we talked to them the other day, they're kind of doing the same thing with, dang it, the guy that found the Clovis blades or
oh,
the blade.
Brad Angu?
Yeah,
yeah.
Angu. They're trying to do the testing on that to see if they're actually Clovis blades. I mean, it's pretty indicative that they are,
right,
but
right, yeah.
they're trying to test soil samples. I know David came out there and took samples of the soil to try to test and make sure that that is what they are. I mean, it's, like I said, pretty obvious. But
yeah.
That'd be cool. I'm excited to hear what comes out of that.
Yeah, me too, man.
But insane finds, man. I mean, just insane. And we talked to Gene about that, too, the other day, just the amount of caches that
to me blows my mind.
It's literally, the day we were there, so we pulled up. We were supposed to dig with Gene that day, and we talked about it in that episode. Like, Gene's a straightforward dude, and I trust Gene a lot more than I trust a lot of other operators, just because of the way he treated me and Christian.
Mm-hmm.
But we pulled up there, and we're setting up and talking. He's like, oh, yeah, cache was found this morning. He's like, it wasn't nothing significant, just like a 6-inch blade and a couple preforms.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Was it Kyle Hicks found that?
Yeah, he hand dug it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. We're like, oh, yeah, just 6-inch blade and a few,
no big deal.
Yeah, just a pretty,
yeah.
just a cache. But,
with the wall of artifacts behind him.
Yeah. But, yeah, some amazing stuff from that site. And it seems like it's been good to you, man.
Yeah, it really has. It really has. I'm super blessed. And I'm hoping to get back out there and do some hand digging here soon. But I think I got some other irons in the fire around Texas right
yes,
now.
Sir.
So.
Have you got to do any hill country digging yet?
Not yet.
Oh,
not
boy.
Yet.
So that
that's something I really want to work towards. It's an area I want to be able to go to. So
what's really cool about the hill country stuff and the central Texas stuff compared to the sand camps is, you know, the sand camps, you're seeing a little bit of sign as far as the debitage and, you know, the sediment lines and some burnt rock.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get into them hill country camps and the central Texas stuff, like what we mainly dig, black dirt, you get into serious sign, like shell midden, snails, bone.
Oh, yeah.
All that stuff. I don't want to say it preserves, but it stays in the soil a lot better than that sand that'll just decompose it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Grinds it down to nothing.
That was something I noticed too when I was at that rock shelter dig. There's a ton of bone.
Oh yeah,
all in that stuff. And I've never, as far as, you know, my experience doing this, I've never dug somewhere that has bone, because in Louisiana the soil's so acidic it just doesn't
yeah.
last.
Yeah.
But there, I mean, I have a. I'm assuming it's a deer bone, but it's just so well preserved. It's like, you know, rock hard almost. It's pretty wild.
And those overhangs, it's where a lot. You know, I mean, if you walk around the show, you'll see the. The cordage and the sandals.
That stuff's amazing.
A lot of the bone artifacts that are actually intact and whole, they come out of those overhangs predominantly just because they're protected from the weather.
Right.
But, I mean, when y'all were there digging that with Mike, I don't know who it was, found that bone needle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, guess what? So I was in the hole. Check this out. And I was like, man, I'm tired. I just let one of the other guys hop in there. Two shovel swipes.
Really?
Came out. I was
dude.
Like, oh, dude, all right, well. Okay.
Very similar instance happened to me at Jonesboro. We went out there hand digging. It's been a long time since Todd allowed hand digging, so it's probably been 5 years. And I'd found a really nice stem darl that day, a couple other pieces. And one of the guys that was digging with us, he hadn't found much. We're digging this one wall, and I'd been getting after it. I found one piece out of that wall, and then the guy next to me found a real nice Owl Creek Marcus.
Oh man.
And digging along, and it's like 4:30. We got like 30 minutes left. And I was like, man, I'm like, hop over here in my spot and, you know, dig here a little bit. It was looking good. He does like two scoops, just and it was sand, so, you know, shaving the wall. Dink. Big wall hanging blade, man. Right where I was at. And I mean, I let him there.
Yeah.
And yeah, we got a pull video of it. He dug it out with a pocket knife, and it was like a 6-inch archaic blade.
Golly,
killer.
Man, awesome.
And then another one the other day at Mike's dig in Comanche, one of my good buddies, his name's James Feliciano. He was there digging, and we'd been digging all day. And It was a little slower on the main section of camp, and Mike's like, hey, let's move over here and we'll dig this hilltop. So we move over there, and James is digging next to this guy from DeLeon. I can't remember his name. Anyway, they're digging along, and they both start talking about leaving. And they come over, and they're talking to everybody, and they're like, yeah, we're about to roll out. Well, James walks to his truck. That other guy, I guess, went back and hopped in the hole for a minute where James was at, and he pulls out a killer Marshall drill.
Oh.
And James is standing at the truck. Like, he'd been out of the hole 5 minutes. That dude got in there, maybe 3 or 4 swings, popped out that Marshall drill.
Man, golly.
But now he knows. I messaged him that evening and let him know. But and we had talked about it all day. That's the thing with hand digging, dude, at a pay dig especially, or if you're at a site that you know other people are coming into, you never know what's on that next swing.
And yes.
It's so hard to leave a hole because you know the person behind you is about to come in there and find that smoker.
It's the way it goes, too.
It's always on the last load or the last pile of dirt or whatever.
Yeah, right. Just like your corner tank.
Uh-huh. So, end of the day magic.
Yeah, man. Well, we appreciate you coming on. You've phenomenal calendar year, and I hope to see you on some digs, especially like we're talking about that deal coming up.
So oh, yeah, yeah.
I'm sure we'll be there together.
Oh, yeah, I'll be seeing you boys again.
Heck yeah, buddy. We appreciate it, Dustin.
Awesome. Appreciate it.
All right, we just finished up with Dustin Latham, and now we got two, I would say, Hill Country legends in the house.
Hell yeah.
Y'all want to introduce yourselves?
My name is Tanner Sheely. I'm from Hondo, Texas. I'm 29 years old now. I have been digging my entire life as long as I can remember. Started hand digging at some family property that we have north of Hondo, just 7 or 8 miles south of Bandera, and upgraded to screen digging with my dad when I was a freshman in high school.
Whoopie.
Whoopie. And a lot of people know him as Whoopie.
Legend. And,
we upgraded screens and kind of took off from there. Now we dig all over the place: Bandera County, Kerr County, a little in Uvalde County, northern Medina County, kind of your general hill country area out that way, but all west of San Antonio.
Yeah, definitely. Tanner is a name very well known in the digging community especially. And then next to me we got
Todd Chisholm.
Very well-known name as well.
Yeah, I've been doing a long time, since I was 16 years old.
Yes, sir. And you own a ranch down and around where?
Yeah, the Uvalde is between the Laguna and Montel.
And it's called the Laguna Montel?
Absolutely.
And what do you do down there, sir?
We raise exotics, do a little pay digging. We have Tanner's done it there. We just kind of have fun.
Yes, sir.
Have fun down at the beach, too. Do a little hunting and fishing.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I know since the start, Todd has been a big supporter of us. And
absolutely.
We cannot thank him enough. I know just about everything me and Christian are into and everything we kind of push this to be, Todd is on the same boat, I think.
Absolutely.
And then Tanner just running some of the best digs in the state. I mean.
Yeah.
They're good whenever I do have the opportunity to pay dig something. It's not going to be bad.
Yeah, the toad on the podcast. The toad. But anybody that does any pay digging knows of Tanner's recent digs for sure. I got introduced to Tanner at his DeHaenis dig. It was on my birthday, actually, and I hadn't done any digging in the hill country at all yet. Everything just around here, Central Texas, and I went down there wanting to find a Frio. And I'd been wanting to find something bullseyed, and I went down there, and I found a very nice bullseyed Frio.
I remember that.
Yeah.
That was the first time I'd met Tanner. It was a slow day. I think Michael was there, and he found a really nice Castorville that day.
Yeah, that camp was a little strange. It's getting further out of the Balcones escarpment. You're having less material for them to collect and work with. Not near as many rocks, so the middens aren't really prominent. I don't know if the sotos didn't grow down there either, but you just don't see it as often. Those camps are harder to find. They're a little slower. I think they were more conservative of the material they had to work with.
Yeah.
But, yeah, DeHaenis, just outside of the Balcones escarpment, off 90. That was a good little sight.
Shout out Lone Star Lithics. Spencer sneaking on through.
I'm about to be pulling some pranks through here.
And then, Mr. Todd, what's going on at your ranch?
Well, we had David for 5 years excavate out there, and that was quite a chore. We had two different type varieties that he named. One is the Eagle, was it Elephant Mountain, and then Shaw's Crossing.
Really?
Yeah, we got carbon dating, I think, back to 10,500.
So like transitional paleo almost?
Yeah, Angostura a little after that.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Very cool. I know there's been some excellent pieces come off of your place I've seen over the years.
Yeah.
And you do a lot of collecting outside of just digging, right?
Yep, yep. Collecting, and like I named the Laguna, me, David, and Carrie all kind of worked on that. And then C.K. Chandler. I think Carrie finished it. Dave helped. I got all the drawings. So
awesome. It's Spencer, been, you can prop that open if you need to.
How do I do that?
There's a little like podium thing right there.
Take it easy.
There goes a broken bell. But, yeah, and then, you know, Tanner, so like I said, I met Tanner in DeHaenis at his first, or one of his early pay digs, and then from there, my experience with you was Twin Elm predominantly. I didn't get to dig Tarpley.
That was a killer camp.
Twin Elm. It was hard to beat. I was after you trying to get you out to Tarpley.
I know that
was a good one, too. There was some of the best of each, of some certain types that came out of Tarpley. There was an ET that came out that, number probably two in the state that I can think of or have heard of. There was a bandy that came out that my buddy Dustin Gaddy found that was up there, man, just a killer. A lot of good stuff out of that site.
Wasn't that a bell preform?
That's what, man, you can lay it on top of some of those bells that came out of there. We found an L-frame bell right before it. It's tough to say, you know, what do you call it? Is it a bell preform because it's got the serrations up the sides of it, or is it a ET that's just phenomenal?
I call it bell preform.
Yeah, go either way. But
Patrick Grass found one in Laguna, just like that.
It makes sense to me
and
either
he
way.
He bought it, yeah.
It fits both descriptions, but... Yeah, Tarpley. I've had some others in between. We pay dug a site in Utopia that was really, really good years back. I've had some smaller ones here and there. I enjoy running the pay digs. It's just a lot harder for me to find those opportunities. Where I'm at, the camps aren't very big, so it's either too small to do a commercial dig or the guy that owns the land I'm really good friends with and they don't want a bunch of people, or the landowners have enough to where they don't need
they
to
don't
turn it into a business side of it, and they don't want a bunch of people out in their place. So they're definitely harder to come by, but I enjoy running however I can do a dig. I do it.
What's your favorite point type?
I'm gonna go with the Laguna.
Oh wow. Yeah, I say Montel, but birds are all mine.
I was about to get to your bird frame.
Yeah, birds. Birds are my passion. Hill country to South Texas. Like, my birds are not East Texas, but I do have a few killer pieces in there. But I'm more hill country, South Texas, border valley region.
How about that Boutwell Edwards from Twin Elm?
Yeah,
see that one?
Yeah,
sweet.
I was there.
Do
when
you have that piece?
Yeah.
Do
yeah.
you really?
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah.
I didn't know that. I was there when he found it. He was on the screen right behind me, and I think he'd come for a half day that day. I think he got there about lunchtime, and shoot, it was probably 2 o'clock, and it was at the very bottom of that table, and he swiped it, and I turned around and I could see it on his screen from my table. I mean, that's a killer Edwards.
Yeah,
that thing was crazy.
I haven't found a good Edwards. I got a couple in there from that site, but they're busted up and stuff.
They're hard to find whole.
Yeah. They really are. Birds are just, you know, I could never duplicate that bird point frame. Never.
No.
It's not possible.
Going back to favorite point type.
Yeah.
I have to go square-eared Castorville right up there with a Laguna.
They're
hard to find.
You always find a broken one, you know?
Always, it seems like.
Tip, ear.
Yeah, one ear.
Yeah.
I got one.
Yeah.
That
yeah,
day.
Yeah,
and
yeah
then
you do.
I had a second one that's 4 inches, but it's missing the one ear. I know Dalton dumped it, and it was laying right on top of the load. And that was the first one I found that day, 4 inch plus. Missing one ear. Terry came up behind me. He goes, man, that ain't another ear. $4,000 piece right there.
Terry Ponte.
And I picked it up, and then a little bit later after lunch, that whole root beer one came out. But, yeah, that's – I would say I'm probably right there with y'all, either squared Castorville, Montel, or a good Marcus. Those are
hard to beat.
Hard to beat Marcus, you know.
How about you, Christian? What you thinking?
I'm thinking the one that I find that's actually worth some.
The whole one. Christian's very new to the digging stuff, so he brings.
Yeah.
We've talked about it. He brings a good perspective in the podcast from newer point of view, trying to learn this stuff, and he's doing a heck of a job. He's paying his dues, so he's ready to find him some killers, you know.
Yeah.
Are you hooked yet?
Yeah, so far. Yeah. Especially coming through here, you know, last year and year before that, looking at everything that's in the dirt somewhere, you're like, dude, I need to find something like that every yeah. single time.
Yeah.
I just got to give respect for Leslie Pfeiffer for putting this on for so many years, you know.
Absolutely.
And this show is phenomenal this year. I mean, look at, there's still people. And there's people staying till tomorrow. So. Yeah,
we'll be here till tomorrow. It's different not having Dana here take up the yeah. back row, but it gave us a corner.
Yeah.
But, I want to get him on here in a little bit. I asked him to come and talk with us and talk with his motivation to running this Leslie. Show. And, yeah. But, yeah.
How many years have you been doing this?
As long here? As this show's been here, you know.
Is that 30 years or so?
Yeah, well, I had the Bernie show back when I was 16 years old. And then I had that. We had the largest show before this show was ever on. And Rob took it over late 80s. And I think it went for another 6 years.
Yes, sir.
And that was the biggest show. We had 130-something tables.
Mm. But long this before is, I was even thought of.
Yeah, this is 200 and, yeah. 200-something tables, so I don't know. Yeah, I got a picture. I'll show you. But I
mean, how does that compare to last year's show? I mean, this year's turnout. You
This show last year was not as good, but it's good. It's so hard to put shows on, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I know I was telling Christian, I mean, this is one of the largest in the nation, and
yeah.
the quality, you come in here, and it makes you sick, the quality that's here, dude. Like, I'm over here, I got one good frame of points, and I'm like, yeah, I ain't got nothing on these points.
Yeah.
Every time I walk in here, it just makes me – but it keeps you going, makes you know what's out there. When is this from?
Bernie Ice Show.
That's an icicle.
That's an icicle. I'm holding it up.
Wow. And you were 16?
I was probably 20 there. Try wow. 20.
So you've that's been cool. doing this
a long time. I'm 54 right now.
I know.
Look at the phone. Y'all don't remember these, do y'all?
I've never seen one of those. What is that?
It's a rotary dial phone.
Did you have a pager?
No, I don't think so. Not yet.
I got sending pigeons.
Right.
It's the airmail, baby.
I got another picture of Texas Cash back in the day. I was like, I was probably 16 there.
That's awesome. Yeah. I got into it about the same. I mean, some ducks.
Yeah.
My dad got me into it. He started digging when he was about 16. His ag teacher had a place.
Oh, really?
Yep. And his ag teacher had let, you know, some of the students that he really liked, they'd go out there and dig. It was a very, very good Darrell camp. A lot of really nice scallions. It had some overhangs on it here locally in Central yeah. Texas. And, he was digging that when I was a kid, so that's kind of what introduced me to it.
Yeah.
I'd go out there with him, but, you know, I was a little kid. I didn't really care. And then when I turned, I think I was 15, is when I really got into digging, hand digging in Nolanville, right here in Central Texas, and went to college, which slowed me down. And then we got access to a camp in Bell County on the Lampasas River, and that got me going again, dude. And I got a little bit of money in my pocket so I could start pay digging and stuff. I wasn't a broke college kid anymore.
Yep.
Now I meet up with it.
I kind of went through phases where I can't remember the first piece I found
yeah,
or the first time I dug. I can't remember any of that. It's just too far back.
Yeah.
But I did go through phases where I didn't dig as much, over maybe a year's time. And then it took was one new site, you know, to get me hooked back into it. And then now it's you can't stop it. It's I can't shake it. I gotta dig somewhere
yeah.
all the time now, yeah. as often as I can.
So aside from pay digging, I mean, when is that from?
Oh, my gosh. This is the Texas Cash, one of the first ones.
Really?
I think when Bob had it. That was my Burr Point collection starting.
You have to send us that. We'll have to.
Uncle Todd's a liar.
Oh, whatever.
We'll throw it in on the video. The video is going to be a little different, having people walking through and stuff, but we're at a big show. You're good, Rudy. Come on, buddy.
This is the last one.
You're A-OK.
Come on,
man.
The only one I'm current, I'm going to knock somebody upside the head again. I'm current at all.
But not only does Tanner run pay digs, but he personally digs too, and he has, I mean, for a personal fine frame, just an insane frame. In that frame, what's your favorite point that you found?
There's a square-eared Castroville in there that it's got some crazy patina on it, some different bluish purple colored swirls in it, and there's a like grayish colored dot right in the center, and it bleeds through to the other side, and it's just something really different. The material is and the patination on it, and that came from my family's place too at our ranch. So
that's cool.
A little more sentimental, but I think I was 14 when I found that, and I'll never forget it either. My dad and one of his buddies, they were yelling at me, "Get out of the hole!" They were digging with the skid steer, and it was up against this ball of oak tree roots that they couldn't really get any further to it, and I was just walking down in it, and I saw it sticking out and grabbed it. And
down there doing a coal wall walk.
Yeah, yeah.
and pulled it. Special.
But, yeah, that's probably my favorite. But now I have a few that I really, really like, but that one stands out.
How about you, Todd? What did you got us? Your best or favorite personal find that you've had over the years?
You know, I have a vague thing I found when I was like 20 years old.
The white patina?
Yep.
All over it?
Yep.
I remember.
That. A few burr points. Man, some Montels. I found a really killer square Castroville in the root beers at the winery.
That Any was, corner tangs?
A few.
I know Tanner's been chasing them. He's loaded plenty of them.
It's eluded few.
Yeah. I got a drill. That was my first.
I've put 24 or 25 on different tables over the years, but I've never found one myself.
Every dig I went to at Twin Elm, there was a corner tang found. There was one day two were found.
Yeah.
There was a corner tang drill one day. Brandon found a corner tang. My buddy found a corner tang right next to me.
Nathan's.
Yeah.
That thing was so pretty.
Love that thing. I talk about it a lot.
Yeah. It's something special.
That piece is insane.
Yeah, that thing is.
Just, I mean, tons and tons of just, I mean, top tier points. Tanner's loaded for people and got to see. Todd, I'm sure the same with you.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what all's come off of your place and what you've seen found over the years.
Man, we really hadn't even dug. You were out there the first time
we
dug.
The first weekend at his place, there was a lot of good stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were there.
It's a good site. Real big.
Yeah. Long. It's just because there's springs that cut through. There's four springs. And
they all feed into the oasis.
It's second terrace on the ranch, and first terrace is buried. The second, third terrace is there. I mean, it's just loaded.
A lot of digging.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's miles, 2 miles long.
That's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
Tanner, do you do any hunting outside of digging?
I do. Not the last year or two as much as I'd like
to.
He's Gucci.
I started bow hunting maybe 6 or 7 years ago.
Yes,
and
sir.
I got really into that. Just at my family's place north of Hondo, we have some land there, and then my mom has some family land north of Hondo as well. And I started bow hunting a lot, and I killed a whitetail. It was just a pretty symmetrical 10-point. I shot it with a bow 5 years ago, 4 years ago. And I can't explain that feeling. It's better than any arrowhead I think I've ever found. It was hard to beat. But since then, man, not as much as I'd like to. I need to start finding more time for that. But
you don't hunt any birds?
I do, yeah. Yeah, bird hunting. There's some good birds in Hondo.
Yeah,
there always has been.
Yeah,
a lot of them. We talked with Johnny earlier. I think you know Johnny, right, Diaz?
Yeah.
And he was talking about some of the hunting he does around down there.
Sandhill crane hunting. He took me, my first time sandhill crane hunting, and I had never been part of that. I didn't even know it was a thing.
Hey, send me a picture of what y'all find.
But sandhill crane hunting was a lot of fun, and they taste pretty good too. Ribeye of the sky, that holds true to it.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun.
I hadn't gotten any sand hills yet, but I think that might be on the menu this coming year, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly the ducks and ducks.
I tried to get him duck hunting at Choke, but he canceled on me.
You don't ever take me.
I had it. You canceled on me. It was the best year probably ever.
I don't know if you'd be able to go now.
You killed any cinnamons or blue wings out there?
Blue wings. I got a killer blue wing and a green wing.
Really?
Yeah.
We're going to
full bloom.
Maybe we get together and do a duck hunt, all of us together.
That'd be awesome.
That'd be fun.
I know Todd's itching.
If Todd would ever invite me.
You canceled on me. You would have been right there.
I know Todd's been itching to get on some wood ducks, and I think we can make that happen between us and Cole.
Cole's got to take me.
Cole's got the wood duck holes, boy.
Yeah, he does.
Dude, we actually hunted a tournament this year, and we planned hunting the tournament. It was a two-day varmint hunt. We planned hunting that tournament around doing some duck hunting. So we went up there. We hunted with Cole. We killed a cat that night and a couple coyotes out there. Hunted until the morning. Then we went and jumped in the duck blind. And, I mean, it was wood ducks and green-winged teal by the dozens just dumping in the hole 15 minutes before shooting light.
Mm-hmm.
And once light come up, I mean, I don't know. We shot a bunch of woodies and a bunch of teal. And then mallards start kind of circling in. It was a pretty wild hunt. But, yeah, you get out there with Cole, and he gets you on some birds for sure.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah, yeah, we'll have to get something together.
Even Travis, I think Travis getting back into it.
Really?
Yeah, he's been talking about it.
I know that we hit the birds pretty hard last year, and we didn't have any just like stellar number hunts, but we killed some really good quality, a lot of mallards, a lot of really good wood ducks, and no pintails. Pintail's been kind of slow on
last year. They didn't have springs.
Yes, sir. I dang sure want to do that sometime. If y'all want to do that, we'll get it together.
Coast is good at that.
I would love to see some redheads and some pintails. That's stuff that we don't get much of.
Lighthouse Lake.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
But I think we're going to kind of wind it out right there. I mean, I know we could talk for hours if we really sat down and looked at some points and got to going, but we're going to get wrapped up, people trying to get out of here. And
all right. Yep. Thank you for having us.
Thank y'all.
Appreciate
it. Yes, sir. All right, we're back. It's day two of the Temple Show. It's kind of clearing out, and we got a very interesting guest with us today. Mr. David, you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, I'm David Callum. I hail from the south of San Antonio, between Laredo and San Antonio, a little town called Divine, which is in Medina County. I'm a contractor there. I do work for TxDOT in highway illumination, and interested in arrowheads.
I'd say a little bit interested anyway, huh?
Yeah. Heck yeah.
So what where is your arrowhead interest taking you over the years, and what do you do as far as for the artifact community, I guess we could say?
Yeah, well, I started out with the Southern Texas Archaeological Association. I became the documentation chair, and I began to go out. The digging started increasing at that time because of the social media, I guess, and so I saw the need to get out and document what was being dug up. And this archaeological society, sometimes they don't want to be seen associated with uncontrolled digging. They don't want to promote that, and I understand, that's good, but nothing was going to stop the digging.
Stop it from happening. It's going to happen.
Good people just going out having fun finding arrowheads, you know. And so I decided that I needed to be out there with them and documenting what they found, because they didn't know how, generally. And so we're just going to lose the data. So it was all about the data for me. And so when I was told that I didn't need to be seen in a photograph with anybody that was digging uncontrolled, I was like, it's time for me to get out of here. You know, I can't be controlled like this. That's not how we need to do this thing. And so I quit and started my own outfit.
Yes, sir.
And Texas Borderland Archaeology is all about getting out to the sites that are being dug and documenting what's being found.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And, I mean, so I've known of your operation for quite a few years. I've been digging since I was in high school, which 2015, I believe. And, you know, as we've kind of dived into this podcast deal, I've got to know a lot more about some of your excavations, talking with Ryan with Texas Cache, talking with Gene at the Hog Eye site. I know recently you were doing some studies on a bladelet cache from GTs. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
What are you finding with that?
Boy, I've learned a lot.
Yes, sir.
Clovis with that. You know, those blade caches are all about cutting edge. And, you know, a lot of archaeologists say that the Clovis people were not just focused on mammoth. And I say, okay, that's true probably, but they were focused on big animals because they needed all that blade edge to cut them up.
Yes, sir.
Butcher them, basically. So, and looking at those, to see the technique they use to get that much cutting edge out of one particular rock, the platforms, the isolated platforms mainly, showed accuracy.
Yes, sir.
Accuracy in detaching those flakes, and it's pretty impressive.
Yes, sir.
Pretty impressive.
How many pieces were recovered in that cache? I know Brad was here yesterday with that. We haven't got to talk with him, but I'd love to talk to him at some point. But how many pieces were recovered with that, and what does that excavation process look like more from an archaeological standpoint than how we dig, just kind of go in there?
Yeah, there were 70 of them, and which is pretty large. I'm not sure if that's the largest ever found, the largest amount of blades. But Brad found it intact. And photographed it.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I was in Harlingen on a backhoe on an archaeological project when he texted me and sent me a picture, and I was like, I will be there in 12 hours. Don't do nothing, you know. But they, it's just the excitement of it was just too much for him, you know. Mm-hmm. So they pulled every blade out before
really?
I got there, yeah. But they photographed it. And that's a unique situation. We have rarely have photographs of caches in
yes,
place.
Sir.
And so they did a good job. I mean, There's a lot to be desired in anybody's excavation.
Yes,
yes, sir.
Guess,
but I appreciate Brad and Gene.
Yeah, we really want to talk with Brad once all the studies are done on everything. I know he's having some more studies done, according to Gene. We interviewed Gene 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Right?
And we talked to him about it, and he said there's still studies being done. I don't know if are you performing the studies currently still?
Well, I've photographed every one of them, and myself and Glenn Goode, who's an expert, really, he won't admit it, but he's really an expert on Clovis technology. We sat down and went over every one of them, and he noted things about each blade, and I recorded that. And so eventually, something's going to get done, but it's probably going to have to. We're probably going to have help. And so, Brad took them to Dr. Waters at A&M.
Yes, sir.
And so Dr. Waters is
doing the current research.
Yeah, well, I think we'll team up.
Yes, sir. So you're kind of playing the role of mediation between the hobbyists that do this for self-collection or what have you and the actual archaeological field. Is that correct? Or
no, I don't think so. I mean, at one point, I think that I thought of myself as sitting on the fence.
Yes, sir.
Between them. But now I'm just doing it on my own.
Yes, sir.
And I'm not relying on anybody in academia.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
So, not that, I mean, there's some good people, you know, but everybody's busy. And so I'm just, my one person go-to is Dr. Hester.
Yes, sir.
Thomas Hester. He's my mentor and very supportive.
Yes, sir.
Harry Schaefer as well. Harry Schaefer. And there's other good ones, but those are the two main that have influenced me. Yes. So, no, I don't think I'm a go-between. I'm the documenter and recorder.
Yes, sir.
Now,
so what does your excavation process look like? I'm sure it varies site to site and depending on what's being found, but what does a general excavation that you're running look like?
Well, we go in and look at what's been found.
Yes, sir.
And so we're really interested in the earliest occupations. That's really what the bones of it is. and we're going to document everything we run into getting there.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so, and I'm not advocating for uncontrolled excavation, but it's saving me a lot of time. That's just the reality of it. A lot of sites that I've been on, the archaic's gone.
Yes, sir.
I don't have to dig through it. I like digging through. I mean, it's exciting, and the early archaic is really intriguing. But a lot of sites, it's gone, and so where I start is on paleo.
Yes, sir.
So that's kind of what, and we're looking for that, you know, because we just ain't got a lot of time.
Yes, sir. And I know, talking with Ryan yesterday, this is really, so we met you yesterday evening, and we talked a few minutes, but talking with Ryan, he says you're really chasing something pre-Clovis, is that the case?
Whatever it is, we're after it.
Yes, sir.
Okay, yeah, earliest occupations. So I believe that there are occupations older than Clovis.
Yes, sir.
And I'm looking for it.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So these sites that have been dug with skid steer, you know, you quit finding as much artifacts once you hit paleo.
Yes, sir.
And these screen digs, their customers, they want to find artifacts.
Yeah.
So they need to move on once they hit the paleo and continue chasing those archaic hot spots. And they leave that.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't pay. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we go in and we look at what's been found, and then I have a mini excavator. I'm a contractor excavation. And so I take my mini sometimes, and we dig controlled mechanical trenching. It's like we dig in a specific area in 4-inch lifts, and we screen it as we're going, and we log those in so we know when we hit a level of occupation. And if we're already below the archaic, then it's going to be a paleo occupation. So then that series of trenches around a site can hone you in on where the paleo hotspot is.
Yes, sir.
And then we set up a hand excavation.
What does that look like? I mean, so I've seen some video of some of your excavations. I've seen photos. I've seen stuff with the Galt site, things like that as well. But what does that hand excavation look like for your sites?
Yeah, so it's not as detailed as they're down. I'll never be able to do it as detailed an excavation as they've done at the Galt site. I mean, they log in every flake.
Mm-hmm.
We just can't do that. And we'd be there forever, never get anything done. It's sometimes we just shovel, skim.
Yes, sir.
You can take a flat face shovel, and especially at Gene's place where it's just sand, mm-hmm. you know, it goes really good. And screen every bit of it and save everything that we find, and then make some determinations about the site. I was looking for something older than Clovis, maybe. And there's a lot of Clovis at Gene's site.
Oh, yeah.
There's a whole bunch. And like at Gene's, we discovered that there was still stratigraphy in that sand, and I wasn't expecting it. I thought that all the artifacts were going to be down on the clay, and they weren't. They were in a chronological order. Every artifact, the deeper we went, was older. And where it should be in relation to each other. Some really surprised me.
And that's really uncommon in sand camps, correct?
Well, I've only dug, excavated in 4 sand camps. They've all been different.
Yes, sir.
So that's kind of like every site, you know, every site is different. But, some of them are, there's no stratigraphy. 50%, I've dug 4 test units in different sand camps, and 2 of them had stratigraphy and 2 didn't. So you got to deal with what's there. You can't just make assumptions about how it's going to be.
Yes, sir.
You're going to be wrong.
Yes, sir.
So you done anything outside of Texas, or has it all been strictly Texas?
Is there anything outside of Texas? I didn't know.
We sure hope not.
Well, if a Clovis guy threw a Clovis point across the state line into Oklahoma, I just wouldn't care about it.
Yeah.
Sorry. I know
Cross the Red
I
River.
I know there
wasn't
no political lines back then, but that's I am.
Yes, sir.
Yeah.
Texas is it. It's in the name, Texas Borderland Archaeology, right?
That's it.
What is, we're not going to hold you too long this morning, Mr. Callum, but let's wrap this up with one question. What is the most significant site that you've excavated or the most significant finding you've had to this point? And I know we talked with Ryan yesterday, we're going to set up a whole full-length podcast at some point, but
yeah,
what is that? That one site or that one finding you have that you want to put your name on?
Well, we excavated a site in Uvalde County along the banks of the Nueces River called Laguna Montel. We found a buried surface, a buried topsoil. It was 8 feet below current surface, and it had been heavily occupied. It was just chock full of charcoal. And no bone, but lots of charcoal. And artifacts. When I first started digging that site, I excavated from the top down and hit a layer of gravel at 36 inches, and I found a spear point that I thought was an Ellis point. And so I thought that this whole 36-inch midden was transitional archaic to the present. I was way off. I was way wrong. That wasn't an Ellis point. It was actually a Martindale point. So we go from there, 52 inches of gravel. Some of it large gravels.
Yes, sir.
And all of it seemingly unstream rolled. And then we hit this buried, we call it a horizon, buried horizon, which, and we dated that horizon, the top of it at 8,800 BP and the bottom at 10,200. So the bottom of it was getting close, or may have been St. Mary's Hall age. The top was archaic Martindale and transitional paleo. Later, they excavated on the top with a skid steer, and they found Martindale and maybe some late paleo, meaning that that 52 inches of gravel was dumped on the surface
there
during the Martindale period.
Hmm.
And it might have been one event.
Yes, sir.
And so I was, put it in that light, it was just awesome to think what's happened that caused that 52 inches of gravel.
Yeah, what's the reason for it?
Yeah, something happened, you know, and everybody kind of knows something happened in early archaic, just not sure what.
Yes, sir.
But that was an indicator of something big, I think.
That's cool.
Yeah.
We talked with Todd yesterday, and we're going to talk with Todd some more in the future. We got some stuff lined up with him, and I'd love to see that site. I know he talked about your excavations on it at Laguna Montell, but
yeah, it was a great site, and many thanks to Todd Chisholm for the support he provided there.
Yes, sir.
Very, very important.
Well, Mr. Callum, like I said, we don't want to hold you up too long today. We're going to go back, do some research, and look into some of your stuff, and have a prepared podcast to sit down with you and Ryan, and I think we can talk for hours, I got a feeling.
Okay, that sounds good. The beer's on you.
Beer's on us, as always. We appreciate you, sir.
Yeah, you bet.
You have
yes,
a good
sir.
All right, so we just finished up with David Callum not too long ago, and now we got on some of the OGs, is what I'll call them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not but, original gangsters, but.
What does that stand for?
Old guys.
Old guys.
Yeah.
Could call you OCs, but we'll keep it PG. But no, y'all want to introduce yourselves?
Yeah.
This is how I thought this was.
I'm Richard's dad, Willie.
Yeah, I'm Luke. I'm Willie's buddy.
Some call it that. Yeah, but.
It's not like that.
No,
yeah, no,
no,
no, not at
no.
All.
We've been best friends since first grade.
First grade, probably.
Yeah.
Long time.
About 3 years.
Yeah. They're now seven. He's my dad.
He got me through elementary, you know. He helped me with all my tests in there.
It was hard times, wasn't it?
Right, an A. Got it. Here, Luke, draw that.
Did he give you his teeth, like, to help your teeth grow?
No.
Oh. That's a hard spot in elementary school, is growing your first two teeth.
God. I thought this was about arrowheads.
It's going to be.
Oh.
But no, we got my dad and Luke Harmon on today, and we've talked about having them on for a long time, but just waiting on an opportunity, and what better opportunity than here at the Arrowhead Show, even though we see them every day, just about.
Right.
But we're just going to talk about some stuff. I mean,
right.
What got y'all into it?
You know, really, for me, I've always been interested in artifacts. You know, growing up as a kid, and you know, some of our family members and friends, they all had some artifacts, and I always liked looking at them, and you know, just wondering what, you know, where they came from, who made them, you know, where they were found, and. But I really didn't get big into artifact digging until got into high school when Luke and I had an ag teacher, Mr. Dowdy, and he had a camp on his place, and he invited us out and really got us started in it. And real down-to-earth guy, but real knowledgeable, and we learned a lot from him, and that's really what sparked the collecting for me.
Yeah. I guess I got started, introduced to it by my uncle, and about two or three times a month, you know, he'd come out and he'd take me under his wing and, you know, start out 6-7 years old, and here I am.
Yeah. Now he's a turkey stick.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I know, you know, nobody really might know who David Harmon is, but David's one of the luckiest guys I've ever known, I think, when it comes to artifact digging. I think he could just walk out and sit down on flat ground and he'd dig up the best point in a cotton picking camp. And he was just that way, and another real down-to-earth, knowledgeable guy. I never really got the opportunity to dig with him, but you know, I talked to him a lot and seen a lot of things he found. And he had a camp on his place, and I dug it a little bit, but just never got the opportunity, which is something I wish I had done.
So then, y'all got, so Luke got introduced to it a little earlier than you did, but then when y'all were in high school, Mr. Dowdy kind of took y'all under his wing too, and got y'all out there.
Yeah, that's out of all the places that I have been digging, that's probably my favorite place to dig, was his place.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you could go in there and you know, just spend a leisurely afternoon or morning down there digging, and you knew you were going to find something, you know, worth talking about. Some of the best bird points in the world, I think, and it was just about every time you went, you was going
to
find.
Yeah, you were guaranteed to find something. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and you didn't have to work hard to do it. It was fun digging.
So while y'all were digging there, I mean, because so we've talked about my getting into digging a little bit, and most of what I've said is mainly in high school, but I was introduced at that camp when I was a kid with you and Rick, and I think with Luke a couple times. When I was a little kid, kind of probably younger than Paxton, which y'all see him in some of our videos, but I didn't really know what was going on. I wasn't super interested. I mean, you tried, but it just wasn't my thing then. But I didn't get to see that camp in its prime. I mean, I've seen the pieces that y'all have, but I mean, what was it like in its prime? What were y'all finding? What was, like you said, you'd go in there and find a couple good ones every time, but we're talking hand digging, so
yeah,
find a few good pieces hand digging is pretty solid camp.
Well,
that it had a lot of insers in it, and you know, beautiful insers, bird points. I can't recall any corner tanks coming out, but
there was a lot of blades that came out of there. But there was a gentleman that was digging there, and I met him a time or two, but again, I don't even remember his name, but he found the majority of the blades, and he kind of found most of them on the north side of the camp, which I never quite understood that. I know when they brought that train through there, you know, they pushed part of that camp, and I don't know if that's why he found those blades, because he found nearly, I'd say probably 75% of the blades were up on that north fence line. I don't know. It's strange, but there he found a lot of blades in there. But as far as corner tanks, I don't know that there was any that came out of there. I'm sure there were, but I don't remember ever hearing them.
Yeah.
So what was some of y'all's best pieces from there?
My favorite and best piece that I found out of there, I forever called it a Marshall. It was about close to 5 inches long, probably, well, maybe 4.5. Anyway, I've always called it a Marshall blade, but it, you know, learning more about it, I do believe it's probably a Darrell, a stem Darrell.
Yeah. And there's a funny story with that one, because we've started this whole, and the problem with that place was there were so many people going in there, and they would pothole the place, and you didn't ever know what had been dug and what hadn't been. So we tried to stay away from, you know, where everybody else was digging. We didn't want to dig anybody else's hole. We didn't think that was right, but anyway, we had started this hole, and there was a tree, and I kept telling those guys for 3, 4, 5 digs, when I get to that tree, there's something at the bottom of that tree. I just knew it. And Luke and I were going out there to dig, and Luke said, "Hey, you want to swap spots?" Because he was in a hot spot. He was finding everything, and I'm thinking about it. I was like, "Well, you know, we're probably a good 8-10 foot from that tree." And I'm like, yeah, okay, well, we'll swap sides today. Well, we swapped, and he just dug a tunnel. I mean, I don't even know how he got down in there, but he just dug a tunnel straight to that tree, and he pulled that blade out right at the base of that tree.
Really?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's not the way I remember it.
Well, how'd it go, Luke?
Of course not.
You know,
got a little family. Yeah,
Willie was asking me to clean out his throw dirt.
Typical.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, but I guess my best point out of there.
He said, yeah, shut up.
Yeah, Luke. I don't want to talk about that no more.
Let's hear it. I want to hear it.
Yeah, my best point I found out of there was a little Darl blade as well. That, and then I've got a bird point that I found. I'd actually dug up a scallion a couple weeks before, and it was super fine, but the base of it was broke, and I was just dying to find one, you know, that was whole. Yeah. just like it serrated like crazy, and ears.
Owl Creek black.
Oh my goodness, man, it was stupid. But I actually went digging with Mr. Dowdy. This is another story, but you always got that little section of bank there in between you and whoever you're digging with, and everybody knows you dig that out and there's something in it. But I was telling Mr. Dowdy there close toward the end, I said, man, you really ought to dig that out. There's something in there. I know what's in there. He said, no, you dig it. Yeah. We didn't. We left it. And I come back, I don't know, a couple days later. It had rained pretty hard, so I let it dry out, and I went back, and that piece had actually broke away from the bank. And so I thought, well, I'm going to get that and clean it up, you know, and get this bank straightened up. And I picked it up, and I firmly believe that man had went back to his house, and he had one of them points, and he put it directly below that clump of dirt, because I picked that dirt up and it was laying right there. I mean, just as pretty as you please. And he says he didn't do that, but I think he did.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, that's my favorite point out of there, I guess.
Yeah, it's a killer. That's like, even as a kid looking at that point, not even interested in arrowheads as a kid, I would look at that one and be like, man, whoever made that was an absolute artist. The same with Luke's Darl blade. It's two-tone Fort Hood gray with some blue swirls in it, and just beautiful piece. But I would love to see all the points that come from that camp, just to see them. And it's been a goal of mine, because we still go out there and dig every now and then. It's been a goal of mine to find a whole piece from there, just to have one to say I've got it. I haven't hit it yet. I've got a broke bell that I found there, and I've got a scallion from the last time we went that's missing the tip, but I don't have that whole one yet. But yeah, it's fun to dig, and kind of like we've talked about in this whole podcast running, it is, we want to get people in the community, and you know, you and Luke have done that for me, and now for Christian, y'all have shaped all of this, in my opinion, and I can't thank y'all enough for that. It's been awesome. And
yeah, don't mention it.
Yeah. We have a lot of good times for sure. We got a When this all started, you know, before Native Ways, I was making TikToks, and you know, me and Christian met and through work and started talking about turning this into something that was useful for the community. But before all that, we were making TikToks, and majority of the TikToks are Dad and Luke pulling points out of a camp that we dug privately for about a year. And I mean, one of them, the video has 3 million views on TikTok. It's Dad pulling out a Fairland drill, and I just there's so many stories from that camp that are just hilarious, like the start of the water bottle technique that we get crap for.
Oh yeah.
But which, you just had to be there to understand it,
which really started as a joke to
begin
it did
with, and then we just figured out it was super effective, so right. Why not?
Yeah.
But made for some awesome pool videos too. But like that drill, I specifically remember, just like Dad said, you know, there's always that mound of dirt between you and whoever you're digging with. Well, me and Dad predominantly dug on the left side of this hole, and then Luke always dug on the right, and there was this one tree in the middle. I don't know what it was, some kind of little scraggly
Spanish oak or
yeah,
something
and that. Our hole just kind of naturally went around that, and it was probably what, 5 foot across that little island of undug dirt.
Yeah.
Probably. Well, that Fairland stuck in the wall, and all we could see was one ear of it, and we didn't know what it was because it's so wide. I mean, it's a 3.5-inch Fairland drill. When it was a whole point, it was probably 4.5-inch Fairland. The base is so wide that you couldn't tell what it was. Like, you could just see a notch. So it almost looked like a Marcus base tang or something sitting in the wall. So Dad's got it hanging out, and he calls Luke. He's like, Luke, come over here. And now I can see it from my side of the hole, and Luke comes over there, and he, what you got? And he's falling down over Dad, and he goes, oh, yeah, I think I seen the tip of that over there in my hole. I got that part on video. And then just, you know, just goofy stuff like that all the time. There's some stuff that we didn't post. Like, there, I'd kind of gone back in the hole and dug a stretch of the wall that I'd missed somehow. I don't remember exactly what happened, but I'd missed a stretch, and I'd popped over a point, and Luke comes over there knocking me out of the way. Give me that. And then there's another one where he comes from over top of the bank, and he looks down in the hole, and it's a tip of, like, an Enzer or something. I can't remember. But it's sticking out. Like, it's, like, an inch or two out of the wall, and Luke leans his head over, and we're like, oh, God, you're going to poke yourself in the eye. Yeah. Like, he almost did poke himself in the eye.
Yeah, and you know, that's finding the artifacts is great. And, you know, when we were younger, and we'd go digging, it was all about finding them points, you know. I mean, it was, we're getting to business, you know, it's time to go to work, and not anymore, you know. I mean, I enjoy going and finding them, but I enjoy seeing, you know, you guys find them more than I like to find them. But the part for me is just, you know,
the camaraderie, fun.
Absolutely. And we're kind of characters anyway, you know. We like to cut up and have fun and make jokes about this, that, and, you know, there's nothing that's not off the table, you know. We make jokes about everything. Some of the stuff, a lot of stuff we can't air on TV.
Yeah, so, yeah, definitely not.
And I got kind of a potty mouth, and my mom was in the digging hole with me. She'd make me eat soap.
So. Yeah, but no, that we wanted to get y'all on just to kind of briefly talk about this stuff, and I'm sure we'll do an episode one day and talk about all the digging stories. But mainly just to, you know, this is why we do it. You know, guys, y'all are why we do it. I'm sure Christian feels the same. Christian's got a baby boy coming pretty soon, and me and Christian get to be those guys for that kid, and y'all get to be y'all again.
Well, you know, as me being a grandpa now, you know, it's, I'm waiting on that day when, you know, when my grandson, he's able to get in that hole, and I'm able to teach him some of the things. And I know I'm no archaeologist, but I have a lot of different outlooks on a lot of these things that, you know, even archaeologists don't quite look at or understand. And I put that back on the guys that I learned from, Mr. Dowdy, you know, down to earth. And generally, you know, a lot of these typologies that these archaeologists have, I'm not saying they're wrong, but I'm saying a lot of times the most obvious answer is the obvious answer, and sometimes I think they get a little crazy with their typology, and but you know, that doesn't make me no expert, but I'm still learning too. You know, every time we go up, we find something that, you know, I gotta ponder on and look at it and examine it to come up with what I think is the most logical answer. And anyway, archaeologists have a place, but I think the people like us, I think we're the ones that really make it go. And those grandkids coming up, they're the next guys. Mm. You know, we're gonna pass that knowledge on to them, and maybe they'll come up with, you know, Christian's baby's coming. I can't wait for the day that we're in a hole and he finds his first one. I mean, that's, yeah. I mean, I'm already looking forward to it. I'm ready. I want to go do it tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, but he's not even here yet, so we got a little waiting to go.
What do you think, Christian?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely the plan. I'm already excited on, you know, what I'm plan on doing as far as being a mentor and teaching. I think that's going to be the most fun for me. I mean, I probably won't even want to do it myself anymore. Like, I just want to see him succeed. He's not even here yet.
Yeah, it's kind of like hunting too, you know. I mean, I've shot enough deer in my lifetime. I mean, I don't know, I'll shoot some more before I quit breathing. But you know, it's you take these kids out, and you teach them what that's all about, you know, and that's more rewarding than any hunt I've ever been on.
Yeah, but we got plenty more digging, plenty more hunts ahead of us. So, and we're going to talk about them. But, yeah, we wanted to, like I said, bring y'all on. Y'all are, in my opinion, at least what shaped my portion of this. And, you know, Christian follows my footsteps on what I believe as far as artifacts and hunting and stuff, and that's why we do this together. And, yeah, we just wanted to show y'all what we're about and kind of what we do. Everybody that's been here at the show that's brought kids by and stuff, you know, it's our goal for that next generation to be encouraged to do this stuff. That's why guys like Gabe that we partnered with on our raffle with these archaeologist buckets and stuff, they're geared towards the next generation of diggers. Same with hunting, you know, get these kids out to hunt, fish, do whatever. So y'all are what started that for me, and I can't thank y'all enough.
Yeah, well, a lot of things we've done, you know, we wouldn't have done without you guys. And, you know.
Yeah, the reason.
Yeah. Y'all are absolutely the reason we do a lot of things we do. And if there's parents out there that aren't doing that with their kids, man, you're really missing out. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could find a number of things to do with your kids, and it'd be the right answer. And, you know, it doesn't matter if you're hunting fossils or hunting or fishing or digging arrowheads. I mean, we have a lot of different things that we dive off into, and you know, some of the things we kind of don't, you know, get into just a whole lot, but you know, we just do a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and
a whole lot of fun.
A whole lot of fun. The memories you make they're irreplaceable, and you can't buy them. Yeah. So any amount of time or money that you got to spend to do that with the kids, and anything that the kids learn from it, it's invaluable. It's invaluable.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate it, Dad, Luke, Christian.
Yes, sir.
I think that's a good spot to wrap it up for the Temple Show.
I think so.
Appreciate you guys having us.
Thank y'all. We just want to shout out Texas Cash, Dancing Dogs, Gabe with Amateur Archaeologist of Texas, Cole with TaylorMade Tables, TaylorMade Rakes. Make sure you check us out. We're about to do this giveaway here in a minute. We'll post that on the Facebook. Christian?
Y'all keep living your hobbies.
We'll see y'all later.
Later.